Coming to Prime TV this week, A Living Hell, Apartment Disasters, a documentary. Roger Levy and John Gray from Hobands have spoken out about the quality of our housing many times over the years. And of course, this is a core social and economic issue for New Zealand, the quality of our builds. The question is to what extent changes to the Building Act have helped, what has got better, what has not. And a lot, it seems, may have not. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Jim.
Tell us again what Hobands is for people who don't know, how it was formed, you know, how it's supported and so on.
It's an incorporated society set up by John Gray and myself, set up in 2009 to represent the interests of homeowners and buyers.
Right.
And, yeah, we provide advice and guidance. We do a lot of work with Bodies Corporate.
How many people do you think you've helped sort out their problems over those years?
It would be in the thousands, because we deal with both individual dwellings, but a lot of multi-unit dwellings.
Right. And
the largest one we're dealing with at the moment is just under 300 apartments. And obviously within that, you touch a lot more lives than, than
300.
That.
What sorts of problems have you mainly struck?
The problems started out being leaks in buildings, moisture getting into buildings, rot, and those sorts of things. But the same environment that created those leaky issues also led to these buildings, many of these buildings not being fire compliant, having structural issues. And so more recently, it's a whole plethora of building defects that we're generally helping people to resolve.
Poor concrete, missing steel. It's a long list.
It generally just comes down to, you know, poor design, poor construction. In some cases, poor maintenance, but in order to make many of these buildings perform, the level of work that would have to go on in the buildings is way beyond what you would expect as general maintenance.
Okay. The St. Luke's Gardens apartments in Auckland, 15 buildings, 285 units, a repair bill of more than $100 million. It's enormous.
It is enormous. And, you know, that's a building that is predominantly concrete. Unfortunately, the prefabricated concrete panels are cracking. Over time, that's going to let moisture into the reinforcing steel. You know, we're having to do a significant amount of work on each of those buildings, overcladding, protecting the concrete.
But as you say in the doco, these are concrete buildings. People thought they were safe.
Yeah, and that's the case. And, you know, I think people focus initially on the monolithic cladding. That's where a lot of the focus was to start with, face-fixed cladding. Fibre cement claddings, but in a lot of cases it's not actually the cladding that is failing, it's the detailing. It's these types of issues like flashings around windows, fire compliance issues where we've got penetrations from one unit to another that aren't properly sealed, we've got structural issues with columns missing.
But flashings around windows go back decades. These issues are old. The concrete issues though, are they new, all these defects in concrete being used, or have they been? Has that been happening since time immemorial too?
There have been issues, known issues with concrete, and there are tolerances around the allowance for cracking and where we have to start to be concerned about structural issues. But there's a big cry at the moment from the engineers, the structural engineers, in relation to a lot of the design, the way these buildings have been designed more recently, some of which we saw in the earthquake situation, but even much more recently than that, we're still seeing buildings that are very poorly designed from a structural perspective.
Are architects, some of them, designing buildings too complicatedly?
I think in the space that the documentary covers, which is multi-unit apartment buildings, well, they're really commercial buildings. But for a residential environment, if you were building a large commercial tower, you wouldn't put a whole lot of decks on the outside. It would basically be glass and steel. But they've got all this fancy detail to make them look good and provide decks and those sorts of things. And that's where the failures occur.
But that is done all over the world. I mean, the fancy detail, we can understand the potential for disaster, but nevertheless, it can be done successfully.
Yes, it can be. And this is where you start to look at, you know, the cost of building in New Zealand, which then lead to people looking to cut corners and, you know, find ways to save.
Yeah.
And if you go back to St. Luke's, the concrete panels, it's at Luke's, were built to an absolute minimum standard, and it meant that the reinforcing steel had to sit exactly in the middle of the wall to give the coverage to ensure that it didn't allow moisture to get into it. There's places in that building where the reinforcing is very close to the surface of the concrete. The protection is the painting of the concrete, but if it gets moisture gets through into the concrete, it gets to the steel because there's not enough depth.
It's a United Nations of people living in these apartments, to use your phrase. How many of them can afford an extra $300,000 on top of what they paid for the apartment?
Very few. We've had the opportunity in many of these buildings to take legal cases and get some level of recovery through litigation, which goes some way to helping with the cost. However, many of the buildings now that are starting to uncover issues are outside this 10-year limitation period within which you can take legal action. So the cost is fully falling on the owners, and very few can afford it.
10 years ago, you made the documentary A Rotten Shame. Now it's A Living Hell, Apartment Disasters, the new one. Have things improved in New Zealand, or have they got worse?
I think they've changed. We're not seeing the same level of systemic failure that we were. However, in the likes of big apartment buildings and those sorts of complexes, well, we're seeing a new range of issues that were there before but not highlighted. If you have a structural failure or a failure of the fire compliance, that's catastrophic.
Yeah.
And that's the big concern that we have in relation to a lot of these buildings.
You are describing, and before I continue, I mean, there are many reputable builders and engineers and building inspectors and certifiers and regulators in New Zealand, and we should emphasise that. But you are also describing, how far would you go? Endemic incompetence, bewildering incompetence, seemingly, sometimes, likely corruption and misfeasance in the building industry. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think we could come up with examples, some of it anecdotal, where all those situations occur. And, you know, these are areas that need to be investigated by bodies who have the power to do so.
The Sirocco complex in Wellington, architecturally designed, and many apartment owners in New Zealand who put their faith in, you know, the glossy brochures and the warm welcome at opening day, have had to sell at a tremendous loss. You found a bloke buying into the Sirocco for $150,000, but he also snapped up two other properties at $70,000 each. Even at that price, why would you do that? Because he's getting big, shorter-term rents, but he'll face huge bills. So what's that equation?
He has taken a considered risk. He's stepped in and taken the problem out of the hands of current owners.
Yep.
And if he hadn't done it, then others would. And he's able to do it because he's got access to funds and no bank's going to lend in this environment. So he's gambling on the fact that he'll be able to get a good return for a long period of time until really the building can no longer be occupied. Now, once it reaches that point, there's still a very valuable piece of land that the building sits on.
Yes.
And so he may well then be able to make a nice, healthy profit and then be able to walk away with a small amount that might come back through the sale of the land. Okay. In 10 years' time, the land's going to be worth a lot more than it is now.
The problem is we aren't just talking about, you know, richer people, are we? There's a young Chinese couple in your documentary. They seem flabbergasted by what they're facing. The mental anguish must be enormous. Lives have undoubtedly been ruined or crippled financially, many lives, and you would know this.
Yes, and we see it regularly, and it's a challenge dealing with it daily.
It is.
And it's frustrating because one of the reasons John and I started the organisation Hobands was to try and make a real difference and improve the situation. And, you know, I feel we've done that for individuals, but the overall picture has not improved greatly.
Another complex in Auckland, The Zone, on the edge of the CBD, repair is impossible, corrosion leaks, untreated timber. In your coverage of this building, the question arises of the responsibilities of previous owners and the people, you know, you put through a building before you buy. The people in your program are intelligent middle-class buyers who had done their homework, but that homework is simply not good enough, and that is frightening.
Yeah, it's very frightening. No matter what these people did to try and protect themselves, it was never going to be enough because, first of all, they're buying a unit in a complex and they might get the opportunity to investigate or have a building inspector look at the unit, but it's very difficult to get an understanding of the entire complex when you're buying into the complex. And in many cases, an effort has been made by the current owners to keep things under wraps. And we've seen this on a regular basis where effort has been made to not mention leaky and weather tightness and defects in minutes of meetings. And so it's actually very difficult to, unless you really know what you're looking for, to get an understanding of the potential performance of a building and what exposure you might have.
Unbridled self-interest is a phrase I picked up. I mean, you tread carefully in this documentary, but you're talking about sometimes at least, presumably, callous and eyes wide open shortcuts in pursuit of profit?
Yeah, it's interesting being in the role that we are, and we see every approach by people who are put under financial pressure. Some cut and run, some are full with full disclosure, others hide everything that they can and try to flick their units on and hope that it doesn't come back to bite them. And I've had others who have totally changed their lives, gone and lived outside Auckland and in areas where they could get much lower rents so that they could manage their way through it and come out the other end with a, you know, with an asset.
And it's walk a mile in my shoes too, isn't it? You know, we can sound preachy from the outside, but God knows what you would do and the pressures you would face when you're in that situation.
That's right. And I think that's why, you know, we really need to start coming together to talk about solutions. This is not a problem that is going away. I doubt we have dealt with more than maybe 15 or 20% of the problem, right? We haven't scratched the surface. And, you know, we could point out, you know, tens if not hundreds of buildings which were built in the era where these were big issues, that, you know, these issues have occurred right up to recently.
Yes.
And that haven't yet fully identified the issues with their buildings and have a very difficult journey ahead.
People face paying off mortgages on homes they don't own anymore. The banks, speaking of solutions, the banks don't want to talk to you, but the banks will soon enough have a big problem themselves, won't they?
Yeah, so from a bank point of view, I think for them, it sort of works to keep it under wraps for as long as possible because, you know, they can write off losses. But, you know, the banks do have a responsibility to their customers. Still, it's still a situation, if you go and get a valuation for a property to provide to a bank, there's very little consideration given to the performance of the building you're looking to buy or the home you're looking to buy. The valuer will do that valuation primarily on the basis of what else has been sold in the area and the superficial look of the building.
Mm.
What really we need is a building surveyor, somebody who understands building performance, to look at, is the building going to perform? Because if it's not, and you're up for $200,000 or $300,000 to get it to the point where it does, then that should come off the price.
Well, MB wouldn't front in your documentary, and your conversations with the housing spokespeople from National and Labor produced nothing seemingly solid. So do we need a properly resourced government department sending out highly qualified people? And how would you do that, given the skill levels seemingly not evident or to the degree they should be in New Zealand? How would you actually see that working?
I think you hit the nail on the head. We need a building ministry. We had the Department of Building and Housing. It got subsumed into MB when it was created. Well, what's lacking here is real leadership to resolve, you know, to understand these issues, work out solutions, and change the situation that we're dealing with. You know, I couldn't tell you who is the most senior person in MB that leads the building construction side of things. And so that's where I would be starting. I think a specific ministry with a lot of power to understand these issues and make the changes that are required.
A Living Hell, Apartment Disasters, and Roger Levy is with us. So we're going to have a situation, or many situations, in New Zealand, even with recent builds, as you say, where repair is impossible, practically, and people will just grin and bear it and live in their leaky, cracking apartments with the flickering electricity and a whole assembly of issues. But then what happens down the track with those buildings, Roger?
Well, I think that a lot of those buildings will end up, the current owners will look to try and manage those buildings to death. So what tends to happen when a building is identified as being a problem, the mix of ownership tends to change. You might have a building that starts with a relatively even mix of owner-occupiers and tenants, and often you see that mix change to more tenanted apartments. Well, with the Residential Tenancies Act putting more focus on the quality of rental properties, it becomes harder and harder to meet those obligations. Mm. The big concern that we have is this one where a lot of investors buy into a building and they're getting good returns and they're really not motivated to understand how the building's performing. And in the end, there will be a catastrophic event, and that will, you know, we'll all stand up and look at that and say, well, why didn't we see that coming?
Things will shift when a disaster occurs.
Absolutely.
How on earth can body corporates be expected to sort out immensely complex construction issues? Where is the built-in commitment from builders and developers?
There's a lot more that can be done in the legislation that covers the body corporate environment, the Unit Titles Act, and actually there's an amendment before a select committee right now that's looking at this. And one of the areas that they're looking closely at is the area of long-term maintenance planning, because when somebody buys into a complex, probably the most important document for them to refer to is a long-term maintenance plan, and it's a requirement in the law to have one. The problem is that these long-term maintenance plans don't have to be written by qualified people. And so, you know, committees are writing their own plans. People are relying on them to buy in, and ultimately they're wrong and they get exposed to large costs. Mm. So going right back to the developer and the builder, they're the best people to put in place the proper plan to ensure the building performs over time. What often doesn't happen, though, is that these long-term maintenance plans aren't properly funded, because if the developer, right at the start, includes a portion of a levy to fund a long-term maintenance plan, the basic levy for the apartment goes up, the amount each owner has to contribute each year, and so it's not as attractive.
Altera in Auckland, in Stonefields, pretty well brand new, not fire compliant, we think, judging by your doco, being fixed by the developer, but with everyone reluctant to talk. Why do you think a highly experienced building firm makes these mistakes?
It's a really good question, and it's one that firm, if they were more open with the situation and were part of an investigation, would be able to help us to answer. The building consent for that building was applied for as a commercial building, not a residential building. And this comes back to the point I was making about the, you know, design and commercial buildings versus residential buildings. In a commercial building environment, there is far less oversight from council, and much more dependence is put on consultants, independent consultants. And the consultants involved in those buildings are well-known, good reputation companies, architects, engineers. There was a lack of oversight, a lack of quality assurance process. There's no mandated requirement to have a proper quality assurance process in place when you build a building. It's crazy.
That seems astonishing.
Yeah, and so if you go and start asking the questions now, everyone will point the finger at everyone else. But in the end, you know, everybody should be working together to produce a good product for the consumer. Now, the owners in that complex are lucky because they've got a reputable building firm and they've gone back to repair the building.
Yeah.
But the question is, how many more buildings are there like that, just at Stonefields, where these issues haven't yet been uncovered? Now, that building's now 6 or 7 years since it got its compliance certificate. After 10 years, nobody is going to come back. There's no legal requirement to come back and fix it. You can't take a legal action. And so in many cases, buildings have been managed carefully by developers and builders over a 10-year period until they no longer have liability. Where's MBIE investigating this? You know, they need to be in all over that, looking at how did this occur, what do we need to do to change it? There's a licensed building practitioner regime in New Zealand, which was introduced, must be 10 years or more ago, which issues licenses to builders, designers, various different parties. Again, where's the practitioners board looking? You know, they need to be in there looking at the practitioners who were involved in this building because they didn't perform.
$9 million to build, $15 million to repair is the figure being floated. New builds are exempt from the new taxes the government's imposing. But to what extent do you think buyers will be able to trust the quality of new builds now when you read the regular horror stories in the media?
The first thing is that you can't assume as a potential purchaser that you will be saved because it's a new building, because there are many, for various reasons, with the pressures on building costs, the high building product costs that we have and the way our market is structured, there's still a lot of motivation to cut corners. Potentially I'd be seeking advice from experts, consultants involved in this industry who know who the good players are and who aren't.
That's a lot of hoops to jump through if you're just a young couple wanting to get into a house, isn't it?
It is. It is. Unfortunately, that's what you have to do to protect yourself in our market.
And as for the apartment, big ones, buildings, you should live in virtual slabs, really. Simply design virtual slabs is my inference from what you're talking about, and unless they're extremely well built, because problems just occur the fancier they are.
Yeah, I think that's right. And many of the buildings that we're having to go back and repair, and we covered one of them in the documentary out at Selwyn Road in Howick, you know, we've had to strip the whole building back out to its frame, really, and put it back together again in a manner where we know that it's going to be okay. And from the point of view of council as the regulator or you know, the party who is applying the regulation, they have a very capable and very busy remediation team who are all over these projects for a repair. But in the new build space, it's a lot more hands-off approach, and that's wrong.
There's a huge flurry of interest in new commercial real estate, but RNZ reported a wee while back that new imaging technology, and I see you use a bit of it in the documentary, has revealed hundreds of major buildings nationwide have defective or missing concrete or reinforcing steel. 1,100 of the 1,200 buildings scanned, which makes you wonder what's going into or not going into some of our houses and apartments.
Yep, that's true. And commercial buildings and public buildings are not safe from this either. The concerning thing in relation to that issue was that the company that did that raised that with MBIE. You would have thought that they would jump, they'd be straight on board that, looking at understanding the issue and trying to determine what went wrong and from a health and safety perspective, or from a safety perspective, making sure that the right things were done. Unfortunately, when those reports went to MBIE, they pushed them back. You know, talk to council, give us the evidence.
The evidence would seem to be 7 metres below sea level in the basement of a large construction project near the Wellington waterfront, load-bearing walls were saturated with water. All that load was bearing on panels with compromised connections and seawater compromised concrete panels enabling erosion. That sounds like evidence.
There's plenty of evidence. You know, we could, if there was interest, we could take MBIE and other parties to a dozen buildings tomorrow that we would be able to show them issues that were of major concern.
And Poto Williams said in your documentary she doesn't have confidence that buildings in the residential sector are fit for purpose. What about the perpetrators? Surely there should be able to be a relevant and traceable register of everyone involved in a build, and they should be able to be held to account you know, instead of winding up a company and starting up another one. Does that sound feasible?
I think it is feasible. There's a lot of changes that would have to occur to make that happen. There would need to be changes to the Companies Act in terms of some of the abilities to wind up companies and those types of things. Now, that's already started, and there have been changes in that area, and further changes are required to protect consumers. In the Building Act, there's the 10-year limitation. Now, elsewhere in the world, there are countries where that's 20 years and there are countries where there's no limitation. And it's crazy that it's only a 10-year limitation period, because if you look at your compliance certificate, the building has to perform for at least 50 years. And yet those people who built it are only liable for 10. When those laws were brought into New Zealand from other Commonwealth countries primarily, there was so much pressure from insurance companies, local bodies and others around that limitation period that it got reduced to 10 years. There was no consumer input into that exercise. You know, the Building Act and Building Code has minimum standards. People build to the minimum. It's not meant to be the standard you build to. It's meant to be the minimum. And we're aware of, you know, builders who basically their modus operandi is to build something that'll last for 10 years and then they're away scot-free. And it's not, you know, they have no conscience that in 15 years' time, the people who have purchased those properties from them are going to be facing significant costs.
I've heard stories, and can you confirm whether this goes on, where an inspection's taken place and then the builders might go in and remove parts of a building's structural integrity, or someone on a remedial crew fixing a build saying you'd take the shell off the house, the weatherboard or whatever, and underneath there'd be no cavity where a cavity should be?
I can confirm that we deal with situations such as that on a regular basis.
Could you get an inspection done of a new build and then go in and remove parts of the building to save money, or is that fanciful?
No, you could. That is not. So, you know, you could get an inspection. The obvious one that you hear about and it happens is, you know, you get an inspection of the mesh and the concrete floor, and council signs it off, and before the concrete gets poured, the mesh gets removed.
Mm.
No, there's evidence, clear evidence that that happens.
At the end of your doco, a young woman says she'd never buy another apartment. Would you ever buy one in a big complex?
I would never buy one in a big complex for various reasons. It's a combination of things. It's the building, but it's also the living environment. You know, we don't, in a body corporate, you don't have a choice about your neighbours. You live very close together in New Zealand. It's a very immature environment and we don't live well together, close to each other. We've just been through an interesting situation not covered in the documentary. We were advising a group of owners, 90 units in a terraced townhouse environment, and they needed to repair all the roofs. There were a lot of leaks into all these apartments. And we had a project underway in multiple stages. The first stage was done. A couple of owners who were retired, had time on their hands and not a lot of money, took it upon themselves to derail the whole thing. The place is in turmoil, and the repair that has to be done at some stage is not going ahead. The value of all those units is now greatly decreased because nobody can buy into that complex with any certainty that it will, that their homes will perform.
One of the tragedies here is, and I'm conscious of the time, but one of the tragedies here is that we are conscious of the need for new houses, dwellings, homes for people to live in. And I saw a recent claim that there are probably 10,000 empty apartments in Auckland.
Yeah, look, I don't know about the numbers, but I'm sure it's the case. And every time we fix one of these buildings, we're having to vacate it. And so all those people are taking up homes somewhere else.
Yeah.
So that's just adding to the problem as well. The thing that's that also concerns us is when we have the pressure on to build all these homes, that one of the things that happens is regulation gets removed. And we saw it in Christchurch. We had to fix all these homes, so the regulations got loosened, and now we're dealing with that. We're going back, and these homes weren't properly fixed, and many of them should have been demolished and rebuilt, but they were fixed because the insurance company was driving that process.
But were we honest hitherto in ways we are not now? Has greed somehow got the better of us? Is this one of the principal problems here?
Yeah, I think it is a big problem. I think self-interest and greed, and you know, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that the consumer doesn't know about. Rebates building industry where, you know, when you go, if you're getting a house design and you go to your architect, you expect your architect to be acting in your best interest and putting on the products and designing in the products that are going to work best in their environment, not the products that they get a rebate on or get a bit of margin on or get some incentive to put. And that is what's happening.
It's a depressing look at the housing industry in New Zealand.
It is, and, you know, we've talked a few times before and it always seems a bit depressing. And I guess we hope that the documentary brings to the fore the fact that this problem hasn't gone away and we need change. We need leadership. We need people who currently would run a mile to actually participate and get involved in working out what, you know, solutions are. And we need to look at the legacy problem because we've got all these people who, you know, good New Zealanders whose wealth has been undermined and who don't have money to repair these buildings. Big issue, and we need to think about how do we fund that? How do we get those back to good, positive houses? And we need to look at the new build stuff, houses that we're building, and make sure that we have processes in place, that their quality, these types of issues don't occur, and we're not going back and fixing them. The amount of waste is huge.
But according to your documentary, we don't have the processes in place and we're going to have new buildings going up at the rate of knots.
And that's correct. And I think the starting point for me, it has to be with the government, with MB. The legislation is there to protect the consumer. Interestingly, when we were making the documentary and we tried to talk to David Clark, the consumer minister, we were told it wasn't a consumer matter. At the end of the day, these buildings are all being built to house citizens, New Zealand citizens, and everybody in that process should be focused on that. And we need to change the system so that's the way it occurs. And we can do it if we just got together and put our self-interest aside and started to look at collaborating and working out solutions. Another important point is that often we see that when these areas are investigated, the people who are asked their opinion and their advice are people from within the industry. And of course they're going to protect their positions. You go and talk to a builder, he'll tell you it's the price of the land. You go and look at building products costs and they'll tell you that it's because we're a long way from anywhere. But we've got margins on margins on margins in these building products, huge amounts of margin. There are some people doing very well out of that whole industry. And as a consumer, you don't see any of that.
Good to talk with you, Roger. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.